Hello, I'm Jonah Moberg with WOOC 105.3 FM, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media here in Troy, New York. And today we have a special guest at the Sanctuary, Adam Tinkle, who is an artist and a professor and a community radio organizer. And anything else?
I think that about covers it.
Cool.
I'm a dad.
I'm also a dad.
A dad?
Yeah.
Great. What's your kid's name?
My kids are Alice and Milo.
Cool. Well, shout out to Alice and Milo.
Yeah.
I guess, could you just talk to us a little bit about your background and what brought you here?
Sure, yeah. So I'm a musician. My background is in music. I've been playing in bands, composing music, playing in a sort of an improvisational jazz vein for a very, very long time. And doing grad school in that brought me out to San Diego. And in San Diego, I got very involved with community arts, with participatory art, and with doing kind of projects that I thought of as both kind of aesthetically experimental and politically engaged. And so the first of those were a series of music workshops with kids where I was working in community centers and designing these workshops where we would design our own instruments or get the kids to compose their own music even like responding to visual art and creating sort of experimental music of various kinds. You know, they would be bowing guitar strings with a bike wheel. They would play, among other crazy things, handmade synthesizers, things like this.
Did you record this stuff?
Yeah. It's online. If you search for Universal Language Orchestra, you'll see some of the stuff around this. So, yeah, then I sort of followed that line of doing stuff with kids. Doing stuff with underserved populations, especially, and that brought me to working in the music department of a community arts center in San Diego called A Reason to Survive. And then from there, I got even more connected with sort of activist arts community and became a broadcaster on a brand new low power FM station out there called KNSJ, Network for Social Justice. It's the only community radio station really in San Diego, which is crazy because it's a giant city.
Well, yeah. let's go back for a second. That's a lot, and I want to return to kind of the foundational, like, sort of crux of your work. It seems like bringing together the worlds of like the experimental and the avant-garde with youth and with communities, you know average folks. And I think a lot of times experimental art and has a reputation, and more than a reputation, it's a reality that it is an enclave that's bracketed by class and by race. And so I wonder how it is that you ended up moving outside of those boundaries, and why, and what the story is there.
Oh man, yeah, you're 100% right. There are various art worlds, right? I mean, like, every scene around any different kind of genre of music, whether it's like the experimental classical scene or the reggae scene or whatever, like that's its own art world. But when we talk about like capital A art worlds, very frequently we're talking about spaces that are not welcoming to most people and are certainly coded upper class, white, highly educated, like they're, you know, associated with wealth and legitimated structures of knowledge, and not with community as we usually define it. So, I mean, I think I felt some kind of dismay about that situation, like low level understanding that was a thing. And then that feeling intensified around the time of the financial crisis. So that's also right around the time that I went to grad school. It was like, I was in this privileged situation of being a grad student with like a stipend for being a teaching assistant. And I mean, I was at a public university, so it wasn't quite as cloistered as it could have been, but I still felt like, okay, I'm in this rarefied community where people are making work without a clear connection to the catastrophic stuff that's in the news. And so I just kind of felt like a need to connect those dots. And one of my professors got a cold call from a director of a San Diego County Parks and Rec community center. And this guy, Ronell Nalon, who's like one of my heroes, like all of my work since then has been somehow like touched by this cold call. He said, you know, we've got karate and we've got like basketball and stuff at the community center, but I want us to have an orchestra and I have an idea for a name, but I have no idea about what it should be. And I want it to be called the Universal Language Orchestra. And, you know, would you be interested in putting something together? So my professor, you know, buttonholed me in the hallway and said, would you be interested in doing something related to this? And it connected to one of the legacies, one of the experimental music legacies that I was sort of most influenced by, most touched by, which is that of the activism and musical production of the Black Arts Movement and, you know, the free jazz and experimental improvised music of the AACM, the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians, which is like a community organization and also artistic collaborative organization in Chicago in the 60s up till now, and many parallel organizations all across the country that started in the 1960s responding to a similar set of social crises and feeling of distance between, you know, advanced or avant-garde thinking, art making, and community. And so thought, you know, people have been doing this and I should figure out how I can be doing this too. And so I basically just started doing it and then liked doing it. And then the more I did it, the more I wanted to like find out about it until I wrote my dissertation about it, basically.
It's a kind of a clear connection too, in a funny way. A lot of people look at experimental work, you know, whether it's the paintings of like Jackson Pollock or whether it's like noise music or whatever, and say, well, you know, my 5-year-old could do that. And a lot of people in the art world spend a lot of time denying that claim rather than just saying, hey, well, give him a crayon, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a connection that I've been trying to flesh out and make in as many contexts as possible, is that like, if we're freeing our senses of what the arts are from like sort of traditional strictures and prejudices about what is art, what can be in art, who can make art, like you follow that line and all kinds of structures of difference, all kinds of structures of inequality become things that you need to interrogate and question. And obviously we're in a moment where questioning the structures of power and inequality around gender and race is totally in the center of the discourse, as it should be. But like, let's also think about all the other structures of difference and inequality, like people who have taken music or art lessons and people who haven't, people who are old enough to vote and people who aren't, people who are able-bodied and people who have disabilities. Like, all of these structures are also ones that we need to think about when we think about broadening whose artistic expressions should be encouraged and placed in the public sphere.
So how did that work for you personally? It sounds like you were moving into this, like coming from this, from your grad school studies, suddenly moving into this new community where you didn't have any connections and people probably didn't know you, maybe didn't trust you. Or, I mean, how did you navigate that new?
Well, so the whole thing came out of the director of the community center's ideas, and he was deeply embedded. So that one of the first lessons and one of the things that I've tried to take with me is you need someone who's embedded. It's not like everybody has to be equally embedded, but that interaction was made much easier by the fact that he, Rennell, the director of the community center, was our advocate to the parents and to the kids. And his word was good to them. And he said, these people are coming down from UCSD. And, you know, already like the big research university in the city has like a kind of double reputation anywhere. It's like known to be a good place to get an education, and it's also known to be like exclusive and potentially elitist. And so it has like this double thing. So there's an opportunity there to get a community of people who don't tend to have access to those kinds of opportunities or educational resources, financial resources. It doesn't help that the university is in the like fanciest part of town, right? But aside from that, he was the core reason why we were able to earn people's trust initially. And then, I mean, I think the other thing is being clear about why you're there and how long you plan to be there. And so it was an evolving commitment, but once we decided we wanted to do the work there for a while, you know, we were able to say like, hey, we're going to be back next year. And we came back every semester until Rennell was disinvited from his position because his higher ups weren't liking how much he was shaking things up, unfortunately. So having somebody like that is so crucial because otherwise, you know, there's plenty of well-meaning folks who want to do this kind of work, community-based arts work. But, you know, how do you earn the trust of a community? And I think the only way really is to forge personal relationships with people in that community. And if you can manage to forge relationships with people who are influential in that community, who already, I mean, this guy's already like a important provider of social services, youth services, educational services for that community. So he was like a known guy. Yeah. And so that was awesome.
I want to move on to some of your more recent work, but before we do that, could you just share one moment of connection or one thing you learned when you were doing this project?
Yeah. One thing that's really been on my mind is the fact that we brought that group from its like underserved low income neighborhood. We kind of brought them on like tours and they played at the concert hall at the university. They played at a street festival and like a fancy beachside community. They played at the art museum. And then on the flip side, we brought musicians from UCSD down to their community and we hosted like a neighborhood music festival. And we weren't really sure what that meant because we didn't really know who was playing music in the area, but we found a couple of folks who were based there. And then we scheduled little impromptu scheduled sets by the graduate student musicians at UCSD. And then we also scheduled sets by the group of children, the Universal Language Orchestra. And one of the real amazing takeaways from that, that like didn't happen when we were in the setting of the concert hall or the museum, was like the kids felt really comfortable in their own neighborhood and they wound up like jamming with the grad students. And I have amazing photos, no audio sadly, of like kids playing the instruments they built, like a cajon, like a, you know, drum made of out of a box, or like different kinds of xylophones made from things you can get at the hardware store, just like jamming out with somebody playing like a Stradivarius contrabass. And I've been thinking about that a lot. I'm trying to figure out what the like lesson or the message of that is. I think there's a few that you could possibly extract, but it was a really amazing experience to see how easy those boundaries could be to cross if you have the right folks, you know, kids who have been taught that you can make music any way that you can and that this is an okay way to make music. If you have adults who are similarly down, there's really no barrier stopping that from happening. And so I'm interested in more stuff like that happening all the time. Like I want to try to live in a world where stuff like that is constantly happening. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, let's fast forward a little bit to your life as a Skidmore professor. So I think there was a radio project that you've been working on and some other stuff. Could you just give us a rundown of what it is you've been up to?
Yeah. So I teach in media studies and in documentary studies at Skidmore. They're both brand new programs. And in my capacity teaching audio arts in the documentary studies program, you know, I've long thought about the various kinds of community projects that I've done and how can I use this immense position of like privilege and influence over the undergrad students who I'm teaching. How can I like steer all of this stuff that we're doing up there in Saratoga towards more of this community-based work? So one of the first big things that I've done in that vein is this past summer, I started a project called Upstate Youth Radio and Podcast Project. And my vision for that is that is to start with doing youth radio in Saratoga, use the fact that there's a college radio station at Skidmore that is does not have very many live DJs on it during the summer because most of the DJs go home for the summer, and think about, you know, getting youth on the airwaves, K through 12 youth, on the airwaves in the summer during the large blocks of time when that studio is available and that big transmitter is cooking, you know, like the college is paying the electric bill, right? I mean, it's like we're playing autoplay.
Right.
So, we did a 10-week project and we did everything from advertising on Facebook and through various email lists to get kids of all ages in. And we also worked in partnership with this wonderful new expressive arts organization called Create Community Studios, which has storefront locations in Schenectady and in Saratoga. And so we would do these workshops in those places as well as at the WSPN radio studio and just say anybody can come. I mean, it wasn't like a class that you had to go every week. Some people did choose to come back week after week. And we I think 50, maybe as many as 50 kids wound up doing broadcasts. Some of them actual live broadcasts, many more of them pre-recordings. And so I had this kind of radio studio that packed down into a, or pre-recording studio that packed down into a trunk of a car easily, you know, a couple pair of headphones, a couple pair of directional microphones, turntable, aux cables, mixer. And so I would just show people how the mixer works. And then we had these worksheets that were like about making up your own radio show, where we encourage them to title it, think of a theme song, come up with a topic. And then if the show only, if the duration of the show is only a couple of minutes, fine. You know, it's at least in this initial phase, it was most about kind of ideation and, comfort with technology and with the idea of being a communicator, you know, like through the media.
Yeah. I mean, microphones are intimidating. And so it's a lot of people, a huge icebreaker just to sit behind one and talk, or in front of one. I don't know. So what kind of content were they making? I mean, what were these shows like?
They really ranged. I mean, we have a lot of kids who their first time in, they just wanted to talk about whatever their favorite thing was. So the girl who's in tennis camp wanted to talk about tennis for a couple of minutes. A lot of the boys wanted to talk about the NBA season, the draft, whatever, playoffs. And then as people, for the people who stuck with it, sometimes it sort of deepened. We had this group of high schoolers who really developed an amazing rapport and a recurring set of strange characters. It was almost radio drama. We also had young kids just playing with sounds in the studio. So I brought all of my sort of small instruments and just said, this is, put mics on everything, and you know, open time for exploration and improvisation and experimentation. So a huge range from, you know, kind of traditional talk radio, albeit done as well as possible by somebody who's never done it before and is 8 or 10, to really experimental, to almost old-timey radio aesthetics.
That's so cool. And was this stuff recorded and archived somewhere?
We have all of it, and we played all of it on WSPN during two weekly recurring time slots. And for me, the next phase, well, among the questions going forward are, should we make a podcast? I mean, we had everybody sign releases. We could use all of this audio and podcast it. And how do we use what we've already collected and already learned to propel this forward? Because ultimately what I would really like to see, this is already sort of seeded by the fact that we were working both in Saratoga and in Schenectady. And we also did one workshop in Troy at the Boys and Girls Club. No, at the YMCA. Sorry. And, you know, I would like to see radio being a way of connecting people across the different communities that make up our region, because there are a lot of different resources and a lot of different challenges in the different cities and towns across the region. And I think radio, you know, already is this force that transcends space and time, and you know, kids can't easily get around. And so they're each in their own tiny bubble and see the world as no larger than Saratoga or Schenectady or wherever. And I would like to see this project grow into something where they're like these teams in different places, all producing small quantities of content and like all listening together as the stuff airs on the different stations simultaneously. And then they afterwards Skype with each other and or interview each other about the pre-produced things that they've just aired. I mean, that's my sort of large scale, long-term vision is a network of youth radio broadcasters around the region that helps with sort of a sense of regional identity, connectivity, and like overcoming the tendency towards segregation, economic, racial segregation, that really characterizes this region.
That's a utopian vision. And I think we'll have to leave it there. But if anyone wants to get involved in this project or follow, we didn't get to talk about your other art, maybe some other day, but where can they follow you and what you're up to?
Yeah. So my website is adamtinkle.com. And you can find me there, email me at adamtinkle@gmail.com or find me at Skidmore College. All of those places are places that I am.
Cool. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.